like that. Second hour is here. Hot Mike with Huddy Withrow here at Outkick.com/watch. Glad you're with us as we head into the second hour. We are in day two of the Masters and headed to the weekend. Chad, our Victor Hovland, not doing so hot. Six over.
Not doing well. He was my long shot guy that I went with.
Same. George Savarikas would not have steered us wrong on his picks for who would be in contention on Masters Sunday. He's the studio host for Live from the Masters on the Golf Channel. Just got off air as well. The long haul of the daily coverage of the Masters. George, thanks for the time, man. Hope things are well.
I appreciate it. Happy to be on.
What's the biggest surprise thus far to you?
Biggest surprise. I'm just looking. I got the first page of the leaderboard right off to my right. I would say the biggest surprise was weather related, that they were thinking Thursday, like, could be a washout earlier in the week. And then it only rained for a little bit. And now we're getting like a firm, fiery Augusta with the wind up today. And it's going to be less over the weekend, but I think the surprise is just how tough it's going to be for the entirety of the week compared to if you were talking to people Tuesday or Wednesday, they were thinking that was going to be a completely different story.
I'll admit I'm surprised Tiger Woods is going to make the weekend, given his physical condition right now. 23 holes today because of that weather, George. Are you surprised that Tiger's right there right now at +1? I think the current cut is at +4, where he's going to advance into Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I would have to say I am. I mean, he had finished two tournaments the last 4 years, as in played 72 holes. We had seen him make cuts before and then just not be able to go on the weekend. I'd say I'm pleasantly surprised. If you had a hypothetical Masters where you could either take a cart or walk, then I would think that Tiger could seriously contend and be a guy who could potentially finish top 10. Like, he swings it that good still, and we see flashes of it. So I was surprised how good he looked on Thursday when he was 1-under through 13. This morning he went from looking his age yesterday to looking 100 the first five holes when he had to resume and was 2 over. And he showed a lot of heart and battled to shoot even par 72 in his second round and advanced the cut streak to 24 straight, setting the new all-time Masters record. So, yeah, I would say it was a pleasant surprise for sure.
What score do you think wins the tournament? Because right now DeChambeau's at 7-under, Scheffler's at 6-under. Where do you think we'll actually end up on Sunday?
If I knew that with conviction, then I'd say let's throw a lot of money on this and then go to Vegas after. But right now, 7-under is a co-leader. I think it's going to be tough over the weekend. I would say 10 or 11-under, and you're probably sitting pretty to win it. That being said, it's all variable based on how much the wind lets down. They were saying it would be closer to maybe 10 to 15 miles an hour, which if it's just one club wind, then guys can go pretty low. But I think Augusta's going to be firm over the weekend, so that'll be part of the defense. So I think if, say, 7-under's co-leader at the end of the day, if you went 70-70 on the weekend and we're at, call it 11-under, then I'd be pretty comfortable that you'd slip on the green jacket after.
I was told a couple days ago that traditionally, if you're in around the top five after round one, that's usually where the winner comes from. Is that accurate? And where, if I'm looking at this list right now, how quickly do I just mark off guys because they're not in the top six or the top eight right now?
Yeah, and then in part of it, I mean, you can start lopping off guys maybe who haven't done it before, but I'm just, again, looking at the first page of the leaderboard. DeChambeau, Scheffler, they both have staying power. Max Homa's never really seriously contended in major, but accomplished PGA Tour winner, looks good. I wouldn't fade Max. I would think that he'd be part of it. Højgaard, who's T4, Masters debut, he's probably one where a ton of talent. I'd probably chop him. I think Danny Willett, good story, coming off injury. Even though he's a past Masters champion, I don't know how much staying power he has. So, yeah, I'd say realistically at this point, you probably could narrow it down to like five guys that could win it. I would go the top three on the board, Oberg and maybe Colin Morikawa, and Matt Fitzpatrick's right there. But I'm with you where you can start looking at the top 10 through a critical lens and say, okay, which guys are going to fade off the final 36 just based on either experience or maybe their game's been somewhat smoke and mirrors through 2 days. Although it's hard to really say that with how tough Augusta's been, where if you're at 300 through 36, they're doing something right through a couple days, sure. But to then continue that through 72 is a completely different story.
And DeChambeau, you mentioned Max Homa also. DeChambeau, a tough one for me to figure out. watching him play and how he can just destroy the golf ball, and especially when he's hitting fairways. Yeah, I think he's got staying power, but does he really have staying power? Right now, tied for the lead with Scottie Scheffler. What do you make of DeChambeau's game, this course, and what you've seen so far, and how that might help us predict how he's going to do over the weekend?
Yeah, and I thought you were going to say DeChambeau, tough to figure out as a human also.
The whole thing is a puzzle. Yes, it's all a puzzle.
It's a never-ending puzzle. And I will say, like, I miss his idiosyncrasies and the quirk that he has. I miss seeing it with more regularity on the PGA Tour. And obviously, it was a choice he made to go to LIV. He is entertaining, and he's fun to watch. And even if he says stuff that can be dumb at times or put his foot in his mouth, he's different, and he's not like the kind of vanilla guys that you see in a lot of professional golf. What I think will give him staying power, not only the fact that his distance off the tee, he can kind of dismantle par fives, assuming that he finds fairways. His putting has been phenomenal. And I know so much has been made of the new set of irons he's put in and the ball striking round one where he hit 15 out of 18 greens. I think the length and the putting will be what keeps him around. The iron game, if it's still sharp, will be what wins it for him. But I buy that he'll be top five this week.
Speaking of DeChambeau and the LIV Tour, how's that merger coming along? Because there was an announcement and then nothing else has been reported, and I feel like nothing has really happened with LIV, PGA, everything being the same. Do you have any update for us?
Yeah, I mean, the latest I'm hearing, they had a meeting that was prior to the Valspar Championship where all the player directors were in the Bahamas. Basically, Tiger hosted everyone. And Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the PIF chief governor, was there on hand to kind of give his pitch on why he wants to invest in the PGA Tour, his vision for the future of professional golf, and how that could align with the PGA Tour. I think part of the delay has been the PGA Tour recognized that if the primary source of capital was the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, then they could have issues having that passed versus if they're the secondary position with the strategic sports group that's kind of spearheaded in part by Fenway Capital, then it might be more palatable. But now it's figuring out, okay, how do we get everyone to agree on the proper direction? And then what's the longer term plan to bring LIV into the fold with professional golf? And I don't know if they would rebrand it, like pick a name, PGA Tour Team Golf, or how it would live on. I know that that's definitely a sticking point where the financial engine behind LIV, they want Team Golf to be part of the future ecosystem. It just, the part that sucks for golf fans, best case scenario, they all come together and somehow figure this out. That's like 2027 or 2028 to unspool everything with just how complex it is. So we're still looking 3-4 years down the road.
Studio host for Live from the Masters on the Golf Channel is George Savarikas, who joins us. Final thing for you, George. I am going to be locked in and appreciate the moments of Vern Lundquist on Sunday. 40th Masters, his final Masters, and the legendary calls. Chad and I know him best as Uncle Vern calling on SEC games, right? What will you remember about Vern Lundquist on 16 at Augusta?
And Vern's such a legend. So it's been great to see him get this victory lap and the proper farewells. And we had him on Live from the Masters on Golf Channel talking about Vern. There have been a lot of people, either colleagues, friends, professional golfers, are just saying how much he's meant to them. I'll always remember, I mean, Jack in 86, I was 1 year old. So it's not like I'm going to like remember that crystal clear. I remember 05, Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
The chip in on 16, the moment Vern's call, in your life, have you ever seen anything like this? Just absolutely nailed the moment. So, yeah, that to me, I mean, he And I was a huge college football fan, so I just remembered him as your voice of the SEC. And then, oh, by the way, I mean, his skill set, he was an amazing hole announcer when it came to golf and some of the biggest moments on the biggest stage that we've seen at the Masters. But Tiger 05, I mean, and lost in the front end, I worked a ton with Lanny Watkins, who was the analyst. And if you watch that, that is like a must watch on YouTube, because start to finish, that's about as high level an execution as I've ever seen for a golf shot like that. Lanny spends a minute as Tiger's pacing around saying he has to land it here. And for him to even get near or hold this, this is what the shot's going to have to do. So he spends a minute breaking it down. Tiger pulls it off. Vern nails the moment. Then the CBS production team on the back end, they called to cut from the shot where the ball is hanging on the cup. And the director, instead of following the call, stuck with his instinct to watch it. And you get the swoosh tumbling in. And Vern nailing it on the back end. It's just, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, there's the Nike swoosh. It just set there. I mean, it was just everything was perfect about it.
Amazing.
Yep.
The market, you're right. From that perspective, everything was perfect about that shot and the call.
That's the beauty of live sports.
That's right. George Savarica is always perfect with us. You're the man. Thank you for the
thank you, George.
Thank you for the insight. And
you're our Vern Lundquist.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Kindest thing you've ever said to me. Good, guys.
We'll have a pre-produced segment for you to honor you at the end of today's show. So it'll be
I
great.
Hope so.
Thanks, George.
George Savarica's there. Check out Live from the Masters. It was I would DVR that show. And the thing is, there's so many new Live from the Masters programs like on DirecTV. You end up with like 9 per day.
I'm not going to go back into my old man complaint about having to find the Masters. There's still a lot of confusion when I turn on ESPN in the morning and watch as to what exactly is happening, because they go live for an extended period of time on SportsCenter.
Yes.
And I'm watching, and then I leave the room for a minute and come back, and SportsCenter's on and from a different studio, and then it's online or on ESPN Plus or somewhere. It's just...
And that's on Augusta.
You know what I love? Sunday afternoon and the sounds of Jim Nantz.
Hello, friends.
Saying hello, friends, to welcome us in.
Welcome,
I know exactly where to find that on CBS, on over-the-air television.
Yes.
We will have that on Sunday. So I'm looking forward to that part of it.
Yes, we will. Sunday will not be a dumpster fire, but we do have our dumpster fire of the week. Guys, I'm just starting it with O.J. Simpson. He died.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
O.J. Simpson, who, never apologized, never asked for forgiveness. Never admitted to what he did. In death, remembered for what he did. And is a dumpster fire for the narrative he tried to spin. But dumpster fire of the week.
Cancer usually gets a bad rap. They actually had a pretty good day.
There you go, David. That's a win. What'd you say? A win for cancer.
I think big win for cancer.
I think you said the rare, your initial response was
and hospice.
a rare win for cancer was your response to us, I believe. My dumpster fire of the week, the Kentucky fans roller coaster.
Oh,
I mean, we are on the loop the loop right now. That is what we are doing. Kentucky fans, oh, please, Nate Oates, please come save us. Nope, he's going to stay at Alabama. Oh, Scott Drew, you're a man of God.
He won't turn us down.
We believe in God and the Commonwealth. Come save us. Save us. You're our savior, Scott Drew. God told him to stay in Waco. Then suddenly it's, oh, well, let's make a run at Danny Hurley. Let's wait on Billy Donovan. Nope, you're going to get Mark Pope, who has not won a single NCAA tournament game, but did play for your beloved Kentucky Wildcats. You hated it last night. You love it today. Everyone's come back around, and, oh, let's support this guy. Let's get behind him. The roller coaster in itself, and this is common with a lot of sports fans when a hire is made, initial outrage, then they get behind it eventually. That's where Kentucky is now. It's my dumpster fire of the week.
Well said.
Yeah, the one Kentucky fan that wanted somebody to dress up like Joseph Smith and convince Pope to stay at BYU ultimately failed. But I am curious to see how that project unfolds.
So they're going to have their press conference for Mark Pope Sunday afternoon at 3:30. What is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints stance on Sundays? I thought that was like no. I
thought Saturday might have been their day, but...
That's Seventh-day Adventist.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
They can't do anything on Saturdays.
They couldn't play their tournament games on Sunday, right?
I just saw someone...
Like if they're in the tournament, am I right on this?
Someone retweeted that and said, how holy, when they said it's on Sunday. You know why? You know why it's on Sunday? Because Disney on Ice takes over Lexington's Rupp Arena on Monday. So they have to get the press conference in on a weekend.
The Pope was going to speak to his followers.
So while everyone's watching the Masters on Sunday, Kentucky will be holding their Mark Pope press conference.
Yeah, my last comment on that is
Kentucky
somebody
fans
said,
will be watching.
Now that he gets to coach a bunch of guys that are not virgins, he probably has a better chance of success. Guys, my dumpster fire of the week.
Coaching kids now, not grown adults, as Calipari would refer to.
Fresh off their 7-year mission.
Right.
So I don't know if you guys saw this, but Northwestern, they're obviously having a big renovation happen at Ryan Field. And so the announcement was that they are going to actually be playing home games at their practice facility. So they're going to make a few adjustments as far as, I guess, allowing a couple of thousand people in. But, I mean, this is a Big Ten school. And while it's beautiful, it's on Lake Michigan, you're not going to be able to get fans into this. This isn't something to where it's, hey, if you're an opposing fan base, you're going to be able to attend games whenever they're playing at Northwestern. Now, they're still trying to find a couple of other venues that might work. But the fact that this is the idea that they're at least throwing out there that they will have football games played at their practice facility, that's just it's nothing but a dumpster fire.
It's terrible.
This is ridiculous.
And I think that by mid-October, they can get either Wrigley Field or, what is it, Guaranteed Rate Park, wherever the White Sox play now.
Yeah.
And they're looking into that for Ohio State and Wisconsin because they play them in late October and November. So the thinking is they will move that game there because of all the traveling fans Ohio State, Wisconsin will bring. But if you look at their schedule, guys, there's really nothing that's going to draw a big crowd before that. It's like they strategically planned it out where this is a bad year for home games for them and everything that's good is late in the season.
Well, I believe this is it's at least another 2 seasons till they get Ryan Field back. I believe they're out of there for 2024 and 2025, which I don't understand why it would take that long for these renovations to do that. I mean, we've seen other schools like still have games take place while they're doing the renovations.
How many fans are they actually thinking they can get in when they bring in all the seating? Because they are going to bring in some,
temporary
seats, right?
Temporary seating. Now this was a cause for Vanderbilt fans to load up my timeline,
okay,
and say do not it said do not let Chad Withrow know this, please. He enjoys attacking schools that choose to vastly improve their stadium, and is known to refer to it as a quote high school. My response to this guy was just like Vandy. This is very small time in Northwestern. It's ridiculous that the Big Ten is allowing it to happen. Another reason both schools will likely get cut from the inevitable College Football Super League that will take place was my response. Now I've got Northwestern Twitter all up in my business online. So,
Chad, growing up here in the SEC, I know a lot of people that just refer to Northwestern as Purple Vandy.
Purple Vandy is one of the best nicknames for Northwestern.
That's
Tommy Hook, who's a big Northwestern guy. Says, Chad, real question, do you know what their stadium, what it's supposed to be finished for the 2026 season, looks like and how small time it'll cost? I just responded. I said, are you talking about their tiny little stadium that's Sunbelt capacity? Their new stadium is 25,000 seats, which, by the way, is absolutely what Vandy should do.
Yeah.
I've been saying this because...
I don't hate that.
And follow me here. You don't have enough fans. Neither program. So make it small, contained, nice... students on top of the field and make it a different environment than everywhere else you go because these fan bases are small and weak.
They are, but they're going to have more fans interested in attending games than not just because they're coming off that Las Vegas Bowl win. They had a season that I didn't expect them to have given what they went through in the offseason. I mean, there is momentum there, surprisingly.
Yes.
And they're going in now the next 2 years, they'll be doing this.
Well,
there have to be other options than just the baseball stadiums. There have to be. There has to be a turf option somewhere.
Yeah, they're looking at a different option. They've talked mainly Wrigley Field. It's probably
right,
going to move
But not until the season's over.
Yeah. But there's only two worth having. I mean, that's what's sad about Northwestern. They don't even care about their other games. Because people aren't going to it anyways.
Yeah. Mark Harris about to join us. Final thoughts and our picks for Masters contention on Sunday. And then we have Aaron Bronstetter who will join us to preview UFC 300 straight ahead right here on Hot Mic. 6th and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow here at Outkick.com/watch. Outkick.com, also the home for Mark Harris, who joins us. Great coverage, including the Masters. He's wearing the green. Well done, Mark. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you all. Pleasure to be here.
Tiger's making the cut. Are you surprised?
Kind of, sort of.
We are
not
too
crazy. Yeah, you know, I would, you know, who knows what happens on the weekend, but I think if there was one bet surrounding him this week, it was probably that one, that, you know, he would make the cut. The stars would align for 24 straight, but it's quite the story. I mean, if you think about it, yesterday he plays till dark and he's got, you know, a 4-hour warm-up routine, and he gets there at, he probably got, what, 5-6 hours of sleep last night at best, gets there at sunrise, tees it up, and yeah, the scoring average earlier in the day, today for round two, was 75. He posts 72. I mean, you take that all day long.
Bryson DeChambeau in good shape right now. I have not been watching him on the LIV Tour. Have you seen some play like this recently from him that would make you think he could have a go at the Masters in this tournament?
Sure. You know, he's kind of been a sporadic guy. You know, he went through the huge bulk up a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, where he just turned himself into a human boulder and looks like a long drive contestant out there. But he's kind of cut back on that. You know, I think he still is long. He says that still is fast with the club. Ball speed's probably about the same, but yeah, you know, he had a kind of a weird year last year on LIV. You know, he shoots 58, you know, he posts around in the 50s. That's pretty good. But you know, you're playing a resort golf course with 53 other guys in the field, kind of different ball game, but you know, he won a US Open 5 years ago now. So he's got that experience. He's been not good at Augusta though. In his history, his best finish was as an amateur, probably a decade ago now, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, you know, he's still a gamer. He's still one of the most talented guys out there. He's been fun to watch. I think that's kind of one of the stories is, you know, even me who covers the game for a living, you don't watch every hole of LIV or anything like that. So it's been fun to see him back in a spotlight, because even if you think he's goofy or weird or whatever, he's entertaining as hell, which is kind of what the game's been missing for a little while.
And he's using 3D printed irons right now, yeah, that were just approved 3 days ago by USGA. Tell us more about this, because this is, I don't know, I'm trying to picture the decision to go from Cobra to Avoda Golf and 3D printed irons.
Same here. I saw that kind of come across my timeline a few hours ago, the first that I was hearing of it. Yeah, they got approved 3-4 days ago or whatever. Then you have, you know, I wrote a story about it over at Outkick.com about Matt Fitzpatrick complaining about his irons and that kind of thing. But Bryson's out of his in the bag for 72 hours. And he's leading the golf tournament, yeah, which is it's wild. Yeah, I can't picture that either. You know, when you think about 3D printers, you think of them just doing random objects or whatever. But this guy's printing irons, and I kind of read up a little bit about it. They've got some curve to them, kind of like these new tech drivers. So if you kind of have a curved face, it makes the miss less sporadic. But, you know, if it makes sense with a driver, why not do it with an iron? I'm interested to see how they look up kind of close. But yeah, he's gaming them right now. He looks great.
Rough couple of days for Jordan Spieth in Augusta. Where is his game right now, Mark?
All over the place. It's not good. He's always been an adventure to watch, right? It's an experience to watch him. I kind of wrote about that earlier in the week too, about, you know, one swing, he looks like that guy that rattled off 3 majors in a pretty quick time frame, 7 years ago now. But he's just not, something's not clicking. I don't know if it's a confidence thing. He'll drive the ball great 1 week. Last week at Valero, after the first or second round, the round where he hit a hole in one, where he basically didn't even celebrate, he just talked about how my game is there, but something's not right. He said I'm hitting the ball way too good to be posting these kind of numbers. It's just been kind of this weird experience to watch. And he hasn't won much at all. Like it has been very, very sporadic for now going on. This is 7 years since he won that Open Championship, his last Open Championship. It doesn't feel that long because Spieth is always in the news. And we always watch him because he's fun to watch, but he has not had it for quite a while. And it's, you know, I think he'll find it again. Of course, he's too talented not to, but we'll see. I don't know if it's having two babies now in the fold and he's getting a little more mature, a little older, but yeah, it hadn't been good. He made a 9 on the par 5 15th today, which is the second time he's done that in his career. Not the stat that you want behind your name.
Mark, I'm going to get to some of the odds in just a moment. I'm going to bet whatever you would recommend here. But first, I'm curious. Chad can chime in too, because I've I'm thinking about the most money I've spent at the Masters Pro Shop. And the money that they churn out here, it's $70 million in merch over the course of the tournament. That's $10 million per day. $1 million per hour is what they're earning during the entire week. $16,000 per minute. And they have $277 earned per second that the store is open.
Gosh.
I think the most I've spent is about $300 in there, and I was getting out light. Curious what the price tag's been for all of us.
What was the last year you went? Have you been to the new shindig?
Yes. Yep. Last time I went was a practice round in 2019.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I'd gone last year. I went to the women's amateur event, and, you know, the gift shop's open as per usual, cause they got to print that money. But that was the first time I'd been into that one. And it was, first of all, just blown away by the line. It's like you're at Disney World where you go through one line to get to a second line and the third line. But I mean, if you would have told me it was $150 million on the week, I wouldn't have batted an eye. $70 million almost seems low to me. It's, you go in there and you have to get six hats. You got to get seven shirts. You got to get this towel. You got to get this belt. You got to get the dog collar. It's unbelievable. I think I spent close to a grand on six items last year.
I think the majority, it's
unbelievable.
A lot of people go multiple days though. You know,
I went once. I didn't go the last time I went. I went with the practice round we went to.
Yeah.
I went to the pro shop, but I didn't go last time I went.
But I'm thinking, like, if you have the pass for the week, you're probably not going every day, but they're still earning $70 million. It's, Chad, how much did you? You had a bag of stuff.
I was probably around yours by 300 to 400, and I'd bought some things for some other people that paid me back too.
Oh.
So it may have got a little bit higher but I got some of that back.
Yeah.
That's where it gets you. You get, you know, soon as you tell somebody
the request,
the entire hometown wants. I need a hat. I need a black hat. I need a white hat. I want this red hat, and it just gets out of hand. And you don't see 100% of that money.
You get
back.
All the screenshots of items people want. Like, okay, here we go.
Or if it rains, everyone's getting the umbrella. Masters merch there.
That is where I turn my phone off for sure. Mark, who's winning this weekend? It's tough to bet against Scottie Scheffler. I feel like right now
he's the favorite.
But who
in Vegas.
Do you have winning right now?
Yeah, it's tough to bet against Scotty. I think we could probably see a three-horse race kind of break out tomorrow by, you know, the turn. Which, you know, it's not a bad group. You know, Bryson, Scotty, and Homa, they're three entertaining guys. Homa's knock is he just has not done anything in majors. Last year's Open Championship was his first top 10 of his entire career in a major.
He's plus 550 right now as I pull it up.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I threw a $15 on him at plus something before he teed off today, which that number was bigger than that. But yeah, I think if you're ranking him, you got to rank Scotty as way, way, way ahead of one. And Bryson can hang with him. I mean, like I said, he's won a US Open. He's done the Ryder Cups. Homa has as well. He's got a little pressure under his belt. It's going to be interesting. It's kind of weird too, as a golf fan, you kind of want to see Scotty do it or maybe even run away with it because it can really kind of start that Grand Slam talk, even though he's one of four if he wins this one, just because how historically great he's been with a golf club in his hand, not named the putter. But yeah, it's Scotty and everybody else until he kind of blows up, but I don't see any blow ups happening with him.
So I've already placed a little on Scheffler already. So DeChambeau plus 400, Homa at plus 550, Morikawa at plus 1800, and Åberg at plus 2200. Of those names.
I just got Morikawa at plus 22. You had plus 18?
Plus 18.
Plus 2,200 for Morikawa.
Now it's up to plus 2 for me. Plus 2,000.
Yeah, of that group, I mean, Åberg, this is his first major, but he was literally built in a lab to play golf, so he could do something. I don't know. It's tough to even pull a trigger on anybody,
So don't
Bryson,
splash anything.
Scotty, Homa. Homa's fine. That, you know, you get a little boost over you saying he has longer odds than Bryson, which he should because he's a shot back. But
he does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. He looks super confident out there too, especially with the putter. Like he made a couple, you know, those 4, 5, 6 footers today that slide 18 inches dead center. So if the putter's working, he's going to hit fairways and greens. So if he can kind of get that putter rolling, he could do something. But like I said, it's Scotty until something happens. His wife maybe goes into labor.
Yep.
Mark Harris, you can check out his great work at outkick.com. Thanks for the visit today. Always enjoy it, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mark.
Mark's visits on the show, always a tradition unlike any other.
Yes. He also is our Vern Lundquist.
It is Mark Harris, where you can follow him on social. Coming up, from golf to MMA, Aaron Bronstetter is going to join us from Sportsnet, and we preview a big fight card. How big? UFC 300 tomorrow night. That's next here on Hot Mic. Top Night with Honey Withrow, outkick.com/watch is where you can stream the show live. 6th and Peabody, our location with Yeehaw Beer and Old Smoky Moonshine. Chad, this weekend, full of events. We've got the Masters coverage and more.
Oh, yes.
Also, UFC 300.
Yes.
And there are certain cards that are talked about. It's like a WrestleMania of sorts. UFC 300's card has been discussed and reported on for months upon months leading up to this and how they will set this up. And as you know, it's an unpredictable sport.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries do happen. There are cards and then there are replacements, right? And, well, it's still a stacked card, as you would expect, coming up Saturday evening in Las Vegas. Aaron Bronstetter with us. He's a Sportsnet's MMA reporter, and he joins us here on Outkick, courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for the most up-to-date fight lines and props for UFC 300. Aaron, thanks for the time, man. How's Vegas?
Yeah, Jonathan, it's awesome out here. I'm coming from Canada, so anytime we get this kind of weather,
right,
certainly not going to turn that down.
What is the temp upgrade from Toronto to Vegas right now?
I'm going to get in trouble with your viewers because I only know Celsius, but I'm going to ballpark it. Let's say like mid-60s in Toronto right now, maybe low 60s, and now we're in like the high 70s, low 80s here in Vegas, maybe low 80s.
There you go. I'm going to get out my abacus and try to figure out Celsius now at that point. That's the only way I can.
Aaron, so UFC 300, and just thinking about UFC 100, UFC 200, where I know McGregor was pulled. You had John Jones, I believe, test positive for roids on that card leading up to it. Brock Lesnar came back, I believe, on that card against Mark Hunt, if I'm not mistaken. How do you describe UFC 300 compared to the card and the hype around 200?
Yeah, that's a great example. And, I mean, Brock Lesnar was also on UFC 100. Jones was on 100. George St. Pierre on 100. So we're talking about a lot of household names here that I think this card is kind of lacking. But a colleague of mine, RJ Clifford, put it perfectly. Like, this card is a love letter to the fight fan, because if you are into the UFC and you look at this card from top to bottom, it is just stacked with top 10 talent across the divisions. A stat came out that 11% of all of the UFC's champions all time are on this card. Just a staggering amount of talent on this card. But, you know, the name value for those that are kind of outside of the fight bubble might not be there. It's one of those, like, you'll have to take my word for it cards. Like, you know, if people are like, should I watch this? It's like, yeah, you absolutely should. But there might not be anything that anybody's emotionally invested in as much as seeing maybe like a Brock Lesnar or somebody that they're a little bit more familiar with.
All three championship bouts are ready to go based on the weigh-ins. Kayla Harrison made weight, which we'll get into in a moment. But Alex Pereira against Jamahal Hill, this championship bout in light heavyweight. Why is this fight worthy for the non-fight, the fight fan who doesn't necessarily need the love letter, right? Like Chad Withrow here.
The impartial, the indifferent fight fan that wants to be brought in.
Explain why this is worthy of the headline bout on UFC 300.
Well, I mean, in the interest of transparency, I'm not sure if it necessarily is. Like, if people were looking for a blockbuster main event, I don't think this is necessarily a blockbuster main event. It's the card as a sum of its parts, I think, is really the sales proposition here for people that want to check this card out. I think that Alex Pereira against Jamahal Hill is going to be a really exciting fight. These are two incredible strikers. Alex Pereira might be the most credentialed striker in MMA history. He's a two-division champion from kickboxing, comes over, starts doing MMA, and within 3 years is a two-division champion in the UFC. Just an unheard-of, crazy combat sports resume. And then Jamahal Hill never lost the title. He was playing basketball a year ago. Of all things, you're playing basketball, a sport where you're not really designed to get injured as opposed to fighting. That's where he tears his ACL of all places. Yep. Ends up relinquishing the title, and now is trying to win back the title that he had never lost in his comeback fight against Alex Pereira, who has just had an incredible run.
Hunt, I do know Max Holloway, a guy that we've interviewed before at a Super Bowl. Great personality. He is a slight underdog in his match, according to Bet Online. Where is Max in his career at this point, and what do you think about his prospects in this match?
What a fight this is against Gaethje, too.
Well, Max's career kind of right now is getting a fresh breath of air, because the problem with Max is he fought Alexander Volkanovski three times and lost all three times. But the problem with Max being in that division is nobody could beat Max. So like every contender that was coming up that they put in front of Max, Max was taking them out. So Max was like clearly the second best guy in the featherweight division. Now, of course, with time, you get all these new challengers. Ilya Topuria just beat Alexander Volkanovski a couple months ago. And I mean, his stardom has just rocketed since then. And I think that after this fight, even though it's at 155 pounds, I would expect that Max Holloway goes back to 45 and fights Ilya Topuria next. I think that's the fight that makes sense. And it's given Max's career kind of a second wind. And this fight, I think, also is just going to be tailor-made for Max Holloway to do what Max Holloway does, which is just put up the pressure, go to war, and against the guy in Justin Gaethje, who will do exactly the same.
And this is, in essence, Chad, also a title fight. This is the BMF belt up for grabs here, the baddest motherfucker belt that they created, that The Rock once presented in the ring. Dana typically hates gimmick things like this. Why is he on board with this type of title reign?
You know, that's a great question. I don't really know, because the first time they did it, he was like, no, this is a one-off. And then they just brought it back, and now they brought it back again. So I guess he has some buy-in. But I mean, if you want the real answer, they're doing 14 pay-per-views a year.
That's it.
All of these pay-per-views need championship fights. If you can make this new kind of makeshift division and you can move the belt around however you see fit, I think it gives them something a little bit more fun. It gives them a little bit of leeway in their matchmaking, because the fight between Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje doesn't make any sense from a merit standpoint or a divisional standpoint. But from a fan standpoint, if you want a guaranteed barn burner of a fight, this is it.
And I know it's not a championship fight. This is worthy of UFC 300 to me.
Like, oh, absolutely.
At the top of the card.
Yeah, this is the fight. Like, if you said to me, Aaron, you know, you can only watch one fight on this card. You unfortunately have to miss the rest of it. This is the fight I'm watching.
What's number two?
Great question. I think Charles Oliveira against Armand Sarukian is a sneaky good fight. The lightweight division is kind of an embarrassment of riches when it comes to talent. And I mean, Charles Oliveira, I might be a little bit biased, but even before I started covering this sport, he was my favorite fighter to watch because I just love how opportunistic and creative he is. And he would rise to become a great champion. At the time that I loved him and he was my favorite fighter before I was covering the sport, he was kind of a journeyman. He was a guy that was up and down, wins, loss, finally hit his stride and did what I think everybody was capable, I guess knew he was capable of, became champion, fell short against Islam Makhachev when he dropped the title. But I think now we're going to see him potentially return to championship form. It's not going to be easy. Armand Sarukian is one of the hot prospects in the sport. Yep. He's a 2-1 favorite in this spot. And I think he is for a reason, because I think if you ask me right now, do I think Armand Sarukian is going to one day be a champion at 155? I absolutely do.
Aaron Bronstetter with us, Sportsnet's MMA reporter. He's here courtesy of betonline.net, where you can check out the most up-to-date fight lines, props, and more for UFC 300.
You're a Canadian, so you don't get in trouble for weighing in on things that are political in the United States. but I am curious, just your perspective on Donald Trump and his relationship with Dana White, and Donald Trump being such a visible force at UFC events. How has that impacted the sport? It's something that I'm seeing a lot online. I'm curious if you think it's brought in more fans. Has it detracted from it? Where do you stand on that? What do you think the impact has been?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because I don't know if there's any evidence to support people being turned off of the sport as a whole by him being somewhat involved, you know, kind of at an arm's length of Dana White. They have a longtime friendship. But in terms of fans of the sport, like whenever I'm in the building and Trump walks in, it's the loudest pop of the night. So it seems like the fans, at least the majority of them, are happy that he's there. You know, Dana White has always previously shied away from politics and wanted to make the UFC kind of an apolitical place. And he still, I think, to an extent, isn't, you know, getting in the way of anybody speaking their mind. So when Donald Trump's there, I mean, I think that there are probably people that are turned off by it. We're in a very polarizing time generally. But I also don't think that, you know, it's hurt the UFC's brand. I think, if anything, it's brought in new fans that maybe otherwise wouldn't have started watching it, because I've never seen a political figure that people support so much. Now, when I say support so much, I don't mean like a percentage of the country, but, you know, the amount that people invest themselves into a political figure in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like that. Like, politicians tend to be something that people sour on over time. But it seems like if people have hitched their horse to his wagon, you know, it's a strong horse, I guess is probably the best way to put it. Like, people are very, very much invested in what he does.
How about the undercard here? and what this means. I think you know, they've got the they have the rights coming up, the negotiations with ESPN. I'm curious what this pulls, just because of this is a stacked undercard, maybe the best ever that I've seen going into a UFC pay-per-view, especially one of this magnitude. But, you know, Kayla Harrison comes to mind for me, who's fighting the UFC for the first time. She is cut down to 135. Where does she normally fight? Is it in the 150s, maybe? And if so, I can't imagine the difficult aspect of cutting down to 135 and then trying to put more weight on 24 hours later.
All right, so when she was in judo and won her gold medals for the U.S., she weighed 172 pounds, I believe it was.
Wow.
When she went into MMA, she was at 155 pounds.
Okay.
And she had a cup of coffee a couple times at 145 pounds. Always thought it would probably be impossible for her to cut to 35. She's just a bigger body frame than 35ers typically are. But she got on the scale today, 136 pounds. She's good to go. But, you know, the big question for me is, like, how will it affect her performance? You know, if you deplete yourself so much and you have to go through a fight before the fight and you face somebody as good as Holly Holm, even though Kayla is such a big favorite around the minus 450 range on Bet Online, I think that it's still a really, really stiff test for her. I mean, we saw what Holly Holm did to another credentialed judoka in Ronda Rousey all those years ago. I think that you're kind of comparing apples to oranges with that because Kayla's training at American Top Team. She's a lot more well-rounded of a mixed martial artist. But I still think that this is a really, really stiff test for Kayla Harrison in her first fight with the UFC.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, imagine Conor McGregor trying to cut down to 145 right now. You know,
I mean, at least he has been 145 pounds. I mean, I would not be shocked if you told me that Kayla Harrison has not weighed as low as 136 pounds in the last 15 years. Yeah. I would totally believe it.
Bigger underdog for Holly Holm. Was she a bigger underdog to Rousey or Kayla?
To Rousey. Okay. She was about a 7-1 underdog against Ronda.
Keep in mind what happened there.
Around the time the fight went off. Yeah, we saw what happened there. You know what? Underdogs typically in women's mixed martial arts deliver the goods more than in men's mixed martial arts. And for whatever reason, the fights typically tend to be closer.
Well, and when I hear Holly Holm, I'll automatically think about she's the one who kicked Ronda Rousey's ass and ended her reign, right? That's what I know about
her. Yeah, that's what she's associated with.
But she's also not Buster Douglas, right, who's kind of a one-hit wonder. She's had a career. She's 42 years old, still at this. I know Kayla Harrison, 33. You mentioned that she's a big underdog in this fight, but that's pretty remarkable. At 42, she's still at this level.
Yeah, well, people forget the first half of her combat sports lifetime was in boxing. She's a boxing Hall of Famer. So, yep. I mean, she came into MMA a little bit on the later side of things. And you're right, like her longevity to be able to do this as well as she has for all this time, still a championship contender, still looking good, I think is remarkable.
They've been having a slow burn for Bo Nickel, building his he's 5-0, I believe. And he's on the main card of this against Cody Brundage. What is the 2024 into 25 look like for Bo Nickel, who is he's got the jet fuel behind the UFC as long as he keeps winning.
Yeah, I think it's an incremental build, and I think this is a good test for him right now. Cody Brundage is at least a UFC veteran, a guy that's won fights in the UFC. It's not some guy off the regional scene like in his last fight against Val Woodburn where they pulled him on short notice. I mean, this is a legitimate fighter. Now, you don't often see lines like we're seeing right now with Bo Nickel. He's like a 16-1 favorite. I call those boxing lines because if you go to any sort of boxing betting on a week-to-week basis, you see these massive favorites that are just expected to cruise. You don't see that very often in the UFC. I think it's kind of by design this time around. It's the opening fight on the main card for Bo Nickel because there are going to be a group of people that just buy the main card. They want to just watch the pay-per-view. And I think the UFC want as many eyeballs on Bo Nickel as possible from those that are kind of outside of the MMA bubble to try to make him a household name.
Any particular line, any particular underdog, it could be a heavy favorite too, that just jumps out to you and you think is easy money this weekend?
Well, I mean, in sports betting, there's not really any such thing as easy money. I mean, if you want to bet on Bo Nickel, he's going to win probably.
Right.
But
you're not going to get
anything. Yeah, you're not going to get much. I think you kind of need to pick a method with him. This is actually, I was talking to a friend of mine who's kind of in the betting space yesterday, and I was just saying, this is just a remarkably hard fight card to pin down. Like, I would say in terms of underdogs that Charles Oliveira probably has the best value just based on the credentials that he has as a former champion, as a guy who's opportunistic, toughest fight of Armand Tsarukyan's career for sure. I think if you're going to look for underdog value, you probably start at Charles Oliveira.
With a win, I know Nickel continues to grow. With a win, who's benefiting the most from a victory on this card for the next opportunity?
I would say probably Max Holloway, as weird of an answer as that is, because he's fighting up a division against the guy that you could probably argue is a title challenger right now. If Max Holloway goes out and beats Justin Gaethje, like, I think his star will raise even higher. I mean, the amount of accomplishments that Max Holloway has for a guy that's his age, I think he's 31, 32 years old. It's pretty remarkable what he's been able to do so far in MMA. I think a win over Gaethje, and he's not that big of an underdog, would really speak volumes about how good of a fighter Max Holloway is.
UFC's going more global. How often are we... The big cards are always going to be in Vegas. I know UFC wants the big moments to be in Las Vegas. How often do you think they'll move around some of these other UFC-numbered pay-per-views and then build towards the ones that are most memorable, like UFC 300 in Las Vegas? Do you think we'll see more big cards outside of Nevada?
Well, I think that card in Miami last month was as big as any card. It was almost up on par with UFC 300, a tremendous card. So they're spreading the wealth around a little bit. I mean, unfortunately, being in a market like Canada, we tend to get a lot of the scraps. In Brazil next month, I think, is kind of facing that same sort of circumstance.
And you need the champ, right? You need the champ to be Canadian. That's why they would take others. That's why the previous pay-per-views have been there.
You need what did you say? You need the chant?
Yeah, the champions. Headlining the card, you're going to your home country.
Not necessarily. I mean, they're going to do a pay-per-view in Canada every year. And I mean, right now, there's not really a Canadian that's even sniffing a title opportunity, unfortunately. But like Brazil, I think, is a better example. Right next month, they've got Alexander Pantoja headlining. He's one of the few Brazilian champions right now. Whenever you do have a champion and you can bring them to that locale, like it looks like the UFC is going to Manchester in July for a pay-per-view. You got Tom Aspinall, who's the interim heavyweight champion. You've got Leon Edwards, who's the welterweight champion. Two fighters from England that you can have on that card. I think that whenever those opportunities strike, they're going to strike when the iron is hot.
Are we going to see Conor McGregor fight anytime soon?
I think so. I would be surprised if he doesn't fight this year unless he re-aggravates his injury or something along those lines. In fact, you know, it seems like an announcement could be incoming about him fighting an International Fight Week this week at the end of June, which is in like 9 weeks. So, I mean, if he is going to be fighting, they probably want to get some laneway on that. We'll have to find out. I wouldn't be surprised if they announced that on Saturday if they are planning on announcing that.
Could they have done it on this card?
I mean, that's a question you've got to ask McGregor in terms of his health and how much he's been training and all of that. I know Michael Chandler's been ready.
I know.
He's from your backyard. I'm
yes,
sure you
is.
Guys
yeah.
Are,
yep.
have a rooted interest in him. But I don't know why it didn't come to fruition for 300. I thought that would have been the logical fight to make.
And then John Jones, what's his recovery time?
Well, I mean, he's also has some personal issues going on right now outside of the cage. But
that hasn't stopped him before from getting back in, though.
No, it certainly hasn't. I initially thought that the likelihood was going to be him fighting at the end of June, but I think with this incident, that they might end up pushing that back to November at Madison Square Garden, if I had to guess.
Been waiting a while, man. And don't have to wait any longer for UFC 300 coming up tomorrow evening on pay-per-view. Stack card, if you like MMA, and if you don't, a good reason to get into it is this card. Aaron Bronstetter's got you covered over at Sportsnet, and he's courtesy of BetOnline.net. You can check out BetOnline for the most up-to-date fight lines, props, and more for UFC 300. Aaron, thanks for the time, man. Great insight here, and enjoy the fights.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure. Anytime you guys want me, feel free to holler.
Yeah, well, same.
Thank you so much.
There's Aaron Bronstetter. Chad, I'll be watching.
Well, I know.
You know,
you don't miss one.
But it doesn't have that casual fan pool that like the buzz.
Yeah.
You know, the buzz of what we've seen in the past, like Brock Lesnar's returning to MMA.
Well, the two names that jump out to me is Max Holloway, who I've watched before, and we've interviewed, and Holly Holm.
Yep.
Who everyone knows because she KO'd, knocked out, took out Ronda Rousey at one point.
Chad, it's going to be a fun weekend for the Masters finish on Sunday.
Should be.
You've got the lawn mowed.
Will Scottie Scheffler finish the tournament?
Well,
will be the question.
Will his wife go into labor? What will happen with all of that? Kentucky's got their coach. Does Lexington burn? It's the next.
It may be partially burned as we speak right now. I know a few couches have been lit ablaze.
They always find the couches.
Yeah,
you know, they never burn every couch every time they're pissed off.
They're going into old apartments and bringing out old couches. Right. I feel like.
Yeah, they are. Plenty to discuss on Monday. Hope you'll join us. Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, Monday afternoon. You can join us right here at outkick.com/watch.